and welcome to the Scottish Song Guide with the Sorries. I'm Douglas.
And I'm Marty.
And this week we are talking about Blue Bonnets Over the Border.
The Blue Bonnets! Hurrah over the border, march, march. Ettrick and Teviotdale, why, my lads, then you march. Forward in order.
Now, Marty, Blue Bonnets is a song which is quite significant for us, isn't it? Because we have started an awful lot of sets with this song, haven't we?
We would pretty much start every set with this song if we could get away with it, I think. It's such a brilliant, the big bods roll at the start, as the Corries found out before us, clearly, that it's just such a it's sort of an instant presence. And even, I remember being in odd places, like when we went down to Brighton Fringe.
Yeah, that
and
was...
did a little street performance there, yeah. Starting with the bods rolling and going, ah, the Blue Bonnets, with the big bods rolling behind you. Absolutely brilliant. At very least, even if people don't care, they at least gets their attention.
Well, that is probably the most memorable time for me. And not so much, as you said, the actual gigs, but that little street sort of promo we did. Because it was a Saturday afternoon and we were standing there. And we just, you know, as we were getting ready to play, obviously we were there in the kilts with the Borans. And a few people were sort of looking at us as they went past,
yeah.
But when we actually started playing, it seemed like a whole sea of people just froze and turned round and then sort of came in. It was a real moment.
It was nice.
And I guess the other one would be when we played in Moscow as well.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, playing.
You're really getting in the full gamut of name dropping in here. This is great.
of course,
we could go on all night like this, except that we don't have any other really impressive ones to mention.
But no, when we played there as well, I think starting with that was amazing. It really took their attention, so it was great. That way back in the days when pre-pandemic, pre-invasion, all those things when we were able to go
exactly.
Places. But yeah, so it's one which I didn't actually know. I'm pretty sure that you introduced me to this song.
Well, we were discussing that, and I thought it was the other way around. But it is quite possible that I certainly, it was from listening to Corries, certainly, that I came to it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So, and it's just they did the same thing for exactly the same reasons.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's good about it, we, particularly when we did our Fringe shows at the Quaker Meeting House up at the top of the Royal Mile, it was good to do a little busk just to kind of, if we had a few spare seats left, to try and just get people in. Just spend sort of
just
5 minutes
around the lawn market. Keep moving.
Yeah, and of course, doing it, we could have one of us playing the Baran and essentially singing as the other one, you know, hands out and tells people to come and see something. Before.
I remember the first year that we did it, walking down the tattoo queue, and about halfway down was a hand of order on our shoulders, and we were informed this was not acceptable behaviour.
Yeah, it's one of the great. Busking rituals, I think. I've had that a few times where you're playing and you think, oh, this is great, especially when you have a place where you either think, right, I'm getting a lot of attention, or, as is sometimes the case, you know, when I used to busk, a lot of money, and you knew that you were going to get stopped at some point, and it was just keeping going, almost walking away, dragging the case, and still playing.
March, march, Estelle and Liddesdale. Oh, the Blue Bonnets are over the border. Many's a banner spread, flutters above your head. Many's the crest that is famous in story. Mountain, make ready then, sons of the mountain glen, fight for the king and the old Scottish glory. March.
If we're talking about Blue Bonnets, where does the song first appear?
Well, the version that we play first appears in a novel, actually, in Walter Scott's novel The Monastery, which he published in 1820. And when it appears, it's chapter 25, if anyone's interested. It's sung to the hero in the hall of Baron Avenel. Supposed to be around about 1549. And he's just thrown a girl, or a girl has just fallen to the ground because of his cruelty, Baron Avenel's cruelty, and cut her head. I think she's actually pregnant as well. And he's also just sent a priest to the dungeon. So he kind of attempts to distract the company and resurrect the evening by saying, "What ho, my masters, are you border riders and sit as mute over your meal as a mess of monks and friars? Someone sing if no one list to speak. And then Scott goes on to suggest that the youngest of Avenel's retainers, Lewis, answers this call. He's the only one in the hall who does. Drains a glass, looks up at the ceiling, and stands up after composing himself. And as Scott puts it, sang the following ditty to the ancient air of Blue Bonnets Over the Border. The song, rude as it was, had in it that warlike character which at any other time would have roused Halbert's spirit, Halbert being the hero. But at this point, given what he's just seen of a pregnant girl falling to the ground because of Avenel's cruelty, he's not really in the mood. And then Lewis sings basically the lyric that we sing when we sing it. But here's the thing. Scott says in the novel, as I said, it's the ancient air of Blue Bonnets Over the Border, and he suggests that, in his novel, he suggests that it's an ancient air by the time of the mid-16th century. And I think that is a little bit disingenuous on Scott's part.
Well, it's a work of fiction, right enough.
But there are examples of it, previous examples of lyrics like this, right?
Yeah, well, it seems to share certain elements with a song called General Leslie's March to Long Marston Moor, which was in Ramsay's Tea Table Miscellany in 1724. We mentioned the Tea Table Miscellany.
Podcast favourite.
Yeah, we mentioned it the other week as the place at Dumbarton's drums first appeared. But General Leslie's March to Long Marston Moor appears there, and there are some similarities which we'll probably go on to talk about. Then Scott includes it in his Minstrelsy of the Scottish Borders in 1802 as Leslie's March, but that's the same as Ramsay's version. And then James Hogg puts it in another collection we've mentioned on the podcast before. It appears in Jacobite Relics in 1819. So there we have sort of a song with definite traits which we find in Blue Bonnets published elsewhere. So maybe just to give a little bit of context of General Leslie and the March to Long Marston Moor, it was a battle during the 1640s between the kind of covenanting armies and the royalists. So this is where the Long Marston Moor thing comes in.
Yeah, that's right. The covenanting armies were marching down to support the armies of the Parliament, Cromwell and co.
Yeah.
Against the royalists.
But Hogg in his Jacobite Relics, he's also got another version, which he calls Leslie's March to Scotland.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because Leslie's March to Scotland seems to be a parody of General Leslie's March to Long Marston Moor. What I find interesting about the two versions that Hogg publishes is he seems to publish the one that we would assume was a parody, as sort of song number three, and song number four is the one that we assumed is the straight version that March to Long Marston Moor, which is the same one that Ramsay published and that Scott had published in 1802 in his Minstrelsy.
Yeah.
But there is a slight suggestion that, in fact, if you look at the one that I'm calling the parody, the March to Scotland, actually, the rhythms of the words are much more similar to Scott's version that he publishes in the monastery. Now, given that Hogg's publishing this in 1819 and the monastery doesn't come out till 1820, Hogg's predates Scott's, just to be clear. But the version we're talking about says, March, march, pinks of election. Why the devil don't you march? Onward in order. March, march, dogs of redemption. Ere the blue bonnets come over the border. You shall preach, you shall pray, you shall teach night and day. You shall prevail o'er the kirk gone a-whoring. Dance and blood to the knees, blood of God's enemies. The daughters of Scotland shall sing you to snoring. Which is brilliant, because you can read that either as oh, this is fantastic. You know, all the girls are going to love you and they'll sing you to sleep. Or the girls will find you so boring that the only thing they'll do in bed is actually you'll be sleeping. And I think by the time you get to the end of this, it's pretty clear just quite how sneering this is. The last verse is, March, march, justified ruffians, chosen of heaven to glory your rising. Ragged and treacherous, lousy and lecherous, objects of misery, scorning and laughter. Never, O happy race, magnified so was grace, host of the righteous rushed to the slaughter. And while it's brutal, yeah, as a sort of put down of the Covenanters, I think it's so close in rhythm to Scott's version.
Yeah, so, well, two questions I was going to ask you. One thing is, Scott and Hogg were obviously friends, So
yeah,
I know the monastery is published in, well, the year after that. Is it 1820, I think?
1820, yeah.
So is there a possibility that Hogg has seen an early copy or a draft of that and has then used that sort of rhythm pattern for his Leslie's March to Scotland? Is that a possibility?
Well, I don't think so, for two reasons. One is that the first time that Scott mentions the book, The Monastery, isn't until the 2nd of August, 1819, when he's writing to his publisher. And by that stage, he's written some of it.
Right.
And he's sort of suggesting, wouldn't it be a great idea to publish it? So I don't think the timeline works that way for a kickoff. Right. But actually, also, Hogg and others were kind of a bit annoyed by the portrayal of Covenanters by Scott at times. They thought that he was portraying them as kind of mad terrorists in a kind of modern parlance.
Yeah, his Old Mortality is this great sort of novel about the Covenanters, isn't it? And Bonnie Dundee.
It just doesn't smack right that Hogg would actually have written this kind of parody which rips into the Covenanters. And I mean, I think the other version, which you mentioned, Leslie's March to Long Marston Moor, which is the one that's in Ramsay's Tea Table Miscellany. You know, there's a few lines in that. March, march, why the devil don't you march? Stand to your arms, my lads, fight in good order. You can hear the echoes, or the pre-echoes, if you like, of Scott's version of it in there. But in that, there's a line that all the world may see, there's none in the right but we, which is why Chambers in 1829 says that that version, the Leslie's March to Long Marston Moor, was written by some sneering cavalier. Well, if Chambers thought that was written by a sneering cavalier, God alone knows what he'd make of Leslie's March to Scotland. But what's interesting, as I say, is that it's really similar rhythmically to the version Scott ends up producing. And it does beg a question, which is maybe, given that they were friends, yes, but they were also from the same area, and they were collecting from similar sources and aware of similar sources and similar singers, maybe there was an original which was using these rhythms.
Yeah.
And it's just that it eventually got picked up. But what I'm saying is that Leslie's March to Scotland seems to me, I'd kind of always assumed that Hogg had written it, but I'm not sure that he did.
Come fae the hills, where your heart cells are grazing. Come fae the glen of a buck and the roe. Come to the crag where the beacon is blazing. Come with the buckler, the lance and the bow.
The monastery is set during the beginnings of the Reformation. It's a very odd book in terms of Scott's overall, I think, anyway, because there's all sorts of things like a magical black book with silver clasps, which seems to be returned to this family time and again. And there's, you know, a white lady who's a magical spirit who sees that it's returned, and there's hands chucking books out of the river and all sorts of things going on. It's a very odd book. Now, it's not long after he writes Bride of Lammermoor and after he was really, really sick and he was taking a great deal of laudanum. And anyone that doesn't know, laudanum is basically opium and red wine. So what could possibly go wrong? But Scott was in so much pain when he was dictating the Bride of Lammermoor that he couldn't remember what he dictated because he was taking so much laudanum. And I'd always assumed that this was sort of another of those books in some ways, which is the after effect. It's kind of surreal and a bit of magic realism. It's odd.
You said that before, that you thought it was the effect of the drugs, as it were.
Yeah. Well, that he's still kind of spaced out, for want of a better phrase. But actually, I think there seems to be a bit more of a consensus that actually all the magical stuff that's happening is his attempt to sort of talk about a mindset that's not rational, talking about the coming of the Reformation, and the idea that, you know, it's working with a very superstitious populace, and not just the peasantry. Everybody's superstitious. So this stuff is real. And that actually, maybe, when he's doing Blue Bonnets, which is actually about General Leslie's march to Long Marston Moor, it's a song about the Reformation, if you like, defending itself against any kind of counter-reformation, then maybe it's entirely deliberate and he's just being very, very clever. And he's just kind of leaving it in there as a kind of quiet joke, almost. I don't know.
But dragging it back from the novel to the actual lyrics of the song, of Blue Bonnets, essentially, in the novel, it's obviously in the middle of the 16th century, somebody is meant to be singing this.
Yeah.
But it's basically about a Scottish invasion of England. The Blue Bonnets are the Scots going over the border.
Exactly. Scots one is a definite rabble-rouser. He's mentioning, you know, Ettrick and Teviotdale, Eskdale and Liddesdale. It's the borders. It's the borders marching across.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's this great tradition of border reeving and all that kind of stuff. And it's hooking into that whole set of traditions. And of course, given where it's set, it's not surprising.
And the rhythm, actually, the words and even the alliteration, you know, all kind of drives it forward, doesn't it? That Eskdale and Liddesdale, all the Blue Bonnets are over the border.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
In fact, in Scott's version, we sing all the Blue Bonnets are over the border. But actually, his version is all the Blue Bonnets are bound for the border.
Yeah, it's better. It's better than the one we sing. Stand to your arms, my lads. Fight in good order is from the original Leslie's March.
Yeah, his last verse as well. Trumpets are sounding, war steeds are bounding.
Stand to your arms, then march in good order. England shall many a day speak o' the bloody fray when the Blue Bonnets come over the border. March.
Now then, Doug, I mentioned that Scott called it an ancient air, or claimed in the novel it was an ancient air from when it was in the mid-16th century. Is that the case? Where does the tune come from? Do we know anything about that?
We've got a good part of the tune. Some people will be familiar, even if they're not familiar with the song, will be familiar with the pipe tune, because it's a very well-known pipe march. The pipe version uses, there are three sections to it, one of which is the chorus that we sing, and another part of it is the verses that we sing, but also has it starts off with a slightly different melody. But the melody, just the tune, the air, can basically be traced back to an old song called "Oh Dear Mother, What Shall I Do?" Sometimes instead of mother, it's written as Minnie. But that dates from the early part of the 18th century, so at least 100 years before Scott was writing. It was well known because it was in the Scotch ballad opera, Patty and Peggy, by the English actor Theophilus Cibber. And he wrote that in 1730. But that was actually a variation on Alan Ramsay's play The Gentle Shepherd, which was from 5 years before. And indeed, the tune, Oh Dear Mother, What Shall I Do, is also in that as song four.
So we're back to Ramsay again.
Back to Ramsay again, yeah. And it has pretty much the verse. I would say you can really recognise the verse of Blue Bonnets in that, Oh Dear Mother, What Shall I Do? There are various people that said that it borrows from the tune to the old song General Leslie's March to Long Marston Moor, but I've looked at that pretty closely and there's maybe a bar or maybe a couple of bars, but nothing
more
than
bar.
That. Yeah, there's always a bar. Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many notes have you got to work with? But one of the people who took that Oh Dear Mother tune was James Oswald, who was the man behind the Caledonian Pocket Companion, which was so important for Burns. He ended up putting a lot of his songs to that. And Oswald definitely took that tune and turned it into a jig, a much more lively thing, because originally it had been quite a slow air. So from that point of view, you might think, oh, so that brings it towards the tune that we sing to Blue Bonnets, but actually the way that Oswald changed it, he got the timing to marry with what we do, but actually the tune stepped further away from from how it had been in The Gentle Shepherd in 1725. So actually if you look at Oswald's tune in 1760, it's less like Blue Bonnets than the tune back in 1725. So
this tangled web.
Indeed.
Over the border.
And there you go. That's our little lightning tour through Blue Bonnets Over the Border and its forebears in terms of tunes and lyrics. I hope you enjoyed it.
And if you did enjoy it, please feel free to leave us a good review on your podcast provider.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Oh,
the Blue Bonnets are over the border. Oh, the Blue Bonnets are over the border.